It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. How much would you give up for something that may sound exotic or unfamiliar to most people, but it's something you really yearn for? You believe in it.
Everybody felt they were there at the beginning of the great experiment, like we were the chosen people.
Would you give up your money, your home, your family? That clip is from the Netflix series Wild Wild Country, which documents the Rajneeshpuram community in northern Oregon, best known for its leader, the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh. The documentary tells a story of voter fraud, assassination attempts, and by the way, the biggest bioterror attack on American soil. What it doesn't tell is the story of those the community left behind. And my next guest lost her mother to that cult twice. Her name is Ronit Fineglass Plank. She is a memoirist and co-host of the podcast Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory and the Young Turk show Smart Mouth. Welcome back, Ronit.
Thank you so much for having me.
I remember, you and I were just talking, I sure remember the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh, and I moved here in the early 80s, but some newcomers and younger folks just aren't going to know what we're talking about. What was the Rajneesh cult?
Well, Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh became really popular in the 70s. He had an ashram in India, and then there seemed to be a big spread among Westerners. He had dynamic meditation and releasing your true essence through living your truest life and sex and meditation groups and therapy, group therapy sessions. And so a lot of Westerners found it very appealing. There was some kind of the free sex and the free love and the releasing all of your possessions aspect, I think, really appealed to Westerners. And so it really took hold out here. And I would say in 1978, it reached my family. And so the ashram basically called my mom, and she went over to Pune. And
the ashram called your mom. Why?
Well, not literally.
Called. She felt called toward
yeah,
it. Yes.
Yeah, sorry. That was confusing. Okay. My mom started looking for a group to belong to, and his meditation tapes, Bhagwan's meditation tapes, and his teaching and his books, and the people who followed him were just captivating. I mean, there were ways to get together with groups and meditate and wear the malas, which were the necklaces, with his picture on the end. And I think that sense of belonging is what calls a lot of people who join spiritual movements.
A sense of belonging, but she had you. I mean, she had a family. Well, but although the family had kind of split up,
think,
is that part of it?
You know what I think? I think that I'm not an expert on cults. I'm not an expert in, you know, coercive spiritual movements. But I do think a common thread is finding someone to believe in who says things to you that make sense. People who are of like mind that you can be with all the time and feel accepted. So if your family of origin doesn't give that to you and you might not have a strong faith, how appealing can that be? I mean, we see it over and over again. And so I really do empathize with the people who followed Bhagwan to an extent, even when the ranch was set up in Oregon, in Antelope, because that was the second time my mom left to go to that ranch soon before it actually broke up. Go on.
What did she say about taking you with her?
Oh, well, so that was put on the table. But a lot of her friends at the time, it was about 1978, told her it would probably be too dangerous to take me and my sister to India with her. They felt, I guess, because of disease or just kind of the confusion over there, it wouldn't be a good idea. And in hindsight, you know, I mean, I'm really sorry that I missed those years with her, those young years with her. Super sorry about that. I also, knowing who I am, know that I would not have done well. I would not want to be a person who was raised on the ashram.
Why do you say that, knowing who I am?
I'm a really, well, this is interesting because I may be in part this way because of what happened, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to follow a coercive spiritual movement, and I don't follow leaders easily. I'm a pretty circumspect person, but maybe if it had never touched my family, I would be really open that way, but I'm not. And I wouldn't want to be running around unsupervised and have the adults kind of out to lunch being children again and exploring their own passion and lives and not looking after kids. I mean, I think in Oregon and on the ashram in Pune, children were housed separately. There really wasn't organized schooling. The idea of sexual boundaries was really loose. That is the opposite of how I raised my family, my children, and I feel really, really strongly about appropriate boundaries for children.
But what does that do to your relationship? Even though you can see the upsides of not having been raised in that environment, what do you do with your mom? You have some kind of relationship
with your mom. I do. I'm really close with my mom now. And I remember there was a time when, if I'd been in therapy a long time ago when I lived in New York, the therapist wondered where my anger was. Why wasn't I angrier at my mom? And I think part of that is, well, for me anyway, I've always been sort of a pleaser, and I would always take things personally if something didn't go right with someone, and I would blame myself. So that's my MO. So I had that inside of me anyway, but then as most kids might do, you know, you blame yourself anyway. You want your parent to love you, and if they don't love you or show up, you might think there's something you could do to change it. So for me, my mom was the gift parent for so many years. To see her was what I really wanted. I never got angry at her or rejected her. So when other 13-year-olds might be mad at their mom and lashing out, I just wanted her to kind of stay put. I didn't go through that phase. And when I got older and had my children, I definitely had feelings about how she was showing up for them as a grandparent. But ultimately, I never got into a rage, a wrathful kind of backlash about my mom. I'm just grateful that she's here, and I understand that she may not have had the resources she needed back then to be the mom that I would have liked her to have been.
We haven't talked about your father. What was his attitude toward the Bhagwan Sri Rajni and your mom?
Well, I'm sure my father would be so happy to know that you asked about him, because he did raise me and my sister. We went to live with him when I was 7, and we stayed with him basically throughout our childhoods. And he was hesitant to ever let us go visit our mom once we were teenagers, because he was worried about what would happen to us. And it took a long time before he felt like she was stable enough and out of the ashram to have us there for the summer in Seattle. But my father was a really responsible dad. He was a single dad raising 2 daughters when that wasn't so common. And he did a good job of not bad-mouthing my mom in front of us. You know, he was kind of stoic about it. I mean, he certainly had anger and disappointment, and I think it was really hard for all three of us. But he did a good job. And actually, I want to say, I think that I'm the way I am, and I'm confident in many regards, and I'm a creative person who believes I can get things done in part because of my father.
I mentioned very briefly some criminal activity. The FBI was involved.
Salmonella.
Yes,
well,
yes.
You did mention the bioterror.
The bioterror, yeah, at the salad bar, right?
How scary, right?
Like, for those who don't know, we should tell people what we're talking about,
bar. Ma'anan Sheila orchestrated a bioterror attack in the town of Antelope and surrounding to try to sicken voters. This is in like 1983 or 1984, to potentially sicken townspeople that would maybe vote against the rights of the ashram. And so I think 751 people ended up in the hospital. They basically spread cups of water that had salmonella infected in it onto salad bars. So that's horrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, that becomes a lot more ominous, right? That's not just a group of people hanging out. I mean, that starts to get a little darker.
Well, what forced your mom, or what got your mom to leave the group?
Well, interestingly enough, the summer that she went out to check out what was happening in Oregon, because she was away from the group for a really long time and then discovered it was happening in Oregon again. She went out there the summer right before everything broke down. I mean, so the authorities, the government came and closed in on Bhagwan. He fled. His lead person, Sheila, who is really highlighted in that Wild Wild Country show in a really sensational way, I can add, she left, and the ranch was falling apart. And that was around the time my mom left. I mean, she left in November of 1985. There was nothing, you know, everything was falling apart. And I don't know if she would have stayed had things not been falling apart.
Was she totally disillusioned, or did she hold the Bhagwan innocent? Did she pursue him? What did she do with
that? What I've talked to about this with my mom, one of my big takeaways is that when she was there in India, they were not doing that crazy group therapy stuff. They were not doing that wild orgy stuff. And she really went there as a seeker. She was not aware of the bioterrorism. She was not aware of these kinds of these criminal, you know, whatever Sheila was doing. She knew Sheila was a strong woman. She met Sheila. I believe she told me Sheila told her she was beautiful. I mean, she knew Bhagwan. But she was not there for the scandal. She was there to kind of find community. And I think when it broke up and she came back to New York briefly, I think she was lost. I mean, I don't know. It's my own interpretation. But those people, as much as I disagree with the way that they may have left their children, I know what it's like to lose the home you come from. I know what it's like, as so many people do, to see your family break apart. And I, for those people, those adults who thought they'd found, you know, a utopia, they could not go back anymore. It was gone. And that is, that's heartbreaking. I can empathize with that.
I'm talking, by the way, we're talking about the Rajneesh family or cult. My guest, Ronit Fineglass Plank, kind of lost her mother twice to the group. Her mother joined them in India and then in Antelope, Oregon. What do you think of this Netflix show?
I wrote two essays about what I think. I wrote one for The Atlantic and The Rumpus because I had such a strong reaction. I'm writing a memoir about this time anyway, but I felt it was really urgent to get my thoughts on paper about this. So many people were being interviewed and writing about this. And wow, I just saw the trailer again to prepare for this interview, and it is so sensational. It's spectacular and exciting, and wow, the music, and you just know you're in for a show. But I remember thinking kind of angrily, like, you know, people are involved here. There are families and children whose like lives were broken apart, and I don't know why the documentary didn't cover that. I mean, how do the people who were involved in Waco and who lost loved ones feel about that series? You know, I know we love our stories. I know we love entertainment in this culture. I know we have a voracious appetite for tragedy and spectacle, but it's hard having a connection, you know, to the actual story that occurred.
Why do you think a documentary-based series wouldn't follow the...
I've thought about it a lot. I feel like some people... In fact, Bhagwan's doctor, I read an article in The Cut about him. He said that he wasn't even contacted for interviews. They never contacted him. So they picked and chose who they wanted to talk to, and you necessarily filter out the story that way. And they did not talk to regular people who lost kids or, you know, anyone who lost their families. They just talked to these head honchos, which I think was an oversight.
We just have about a minute left, Ronit. I just wonder how this familiarity, such a close and at times painful familiarity with your mother's search for something we can all relate to, how do you think that affects how you go forward and search for what's meaningful to you?
I think that I really believe that I know a lot of people need outside help sometimes, but I think that everyone can find what feels good to them and they should listen to themselves. It sounds really kind of, you know, fluffy there, but I really feel like we have to listen to our own instincts and be wary of people who tell us what to think and how to act and how to treat people who we love.
Ronit Fineglass Plank is co-host of the podcast Mouthy Messy Mandatory, as well as a new show on the Young Turks Network called Smart Mouth. And you're working on a memoir, right?
Yeah, it's almost done. I'm editing it now about this time until I was about 15, just from birth to 15, about this period of my life.
Ronit's life, including her mom's time as a member of the Rajneesh cult. Ronit, we look forward to that. Thanks for coming in and telling us
about it. Thank you so much for having me.
And again, I guess I'm promoting a flawed vehicle here, but if we've made you curious about the Netflix series, it's called Wild Wild Country, and hopefully you'll watch it a little more smartly than you would have a few minutes ago. Thank you.
Thank you.